Aherna, Bikansa, agus Eistlin. Welcome to Connected Communication, a podcast exploring the intriguing interplay between language, culture, and the brain through the lens of self-awareness. I'm your host, Christine. Anyone who grew up in or has been to Mass in Ireland will have heard those words at some stage. I used to serve Mass and sing in the church choir. In all honesty now, neither because of devout faith. I adored singing. I love hymns. And choir was a way to spend time with Dad, and serving Mass got you both out of school and, although this might sound dreadful, made you a few quid at funerals and weddings. But something very strange happened at Mass one day. I'm not exactly positive how. My granny was a devout Catholic at the time, a Eucharistic minister. A ministress. Actually, let me segue a wee bit here for this. I had to be looking up the feminine term for these masculine terms that we have floating about in languages. And I'm going to segue again. When you hear me say I do be looking up, depending on which part of the world you're from, you might be thinking, do be looking up. Even if you're from Ireland, you might be judging me on that one, actually. It comes from the Irish, from our habitual verb be, as far as I know. I'm not going to claim expertise on that, so listen to the Irish with Molly podcast or follow her on Instagram to find out the exact understanding of it. But it's a perfectly acceptable grammatical form in Ireland. When I was getting these notes ready, I looked up whether ministress is a word or not. Minister tends to be applied unilaterally to both males and females. And it still is, despite the word ministress existing. In Ireland, for example, the Minister for Justice is female, but she's still called a minister. When I was looking it up, I found a great post on Babel Languages. It goes back to 2015, I think is the date, so it might be a wee bit old and something might have changed by now. The Italians, it seems, are open to adding an a at the end of the words traditionally having only a male form. So, ministra, for a minister. It seems the Italians would prefer not to announce the pregnancy of local ministers using a male form. And rightly so. Spanish and German also have two terms, ministra in Espanol and Bundeskanzlerin, the in denoting the feminine in German. But German is also apparently seeing a shift towards gender-neutral words. The French, or namely l'Académie Français, inherently bent on manner at all times, chose to add Madame before Minister to distinguish the two, whereas in Quebec, a law passed in 1979 recognises two terms, one male, one female. That date coincides with the election of Quebec's first female premier. So unsurprisingly, like most changes in this world, it was reactive rather than proactive. The word minister to refer to a woman in French Quebec just wasn't what listeners wanted to hear, it seems. So Granny was a Eucharistic ministress, what you might call a church keeper, someone who helped the sacristan keep the church clean and fresh, and a regular churchgoer. Lent has just finished as I make this podcast, in fact today as I record. During Lent, we used to have to give up something for Christ's 40-day sacrifice, we'd have to do the same. Give up chocolate or something else you loved for 40 days and go to Mass every day for 40 days. St. Patrick's Day was in the middle of Lent, so you'd get a special dispensation that day. You'd go nuts, stuffing everything you could into your face, all the chocolate in the world because you were allowed to. But if you served Mass during Lent, it was great. You traipse your way slowly over to school through what was called the clump, a lovely clump of trees on an open path that split the roads between the church and the schoolhouse through a load of fields. It was probably the site of an illegal Mass back in the day when Mass wasn't allowed, and that's what cut the path through. Unfortunately, people have become greedier and more entitled, and the house owners whose land the clump backs onto have fenced it up. So there's no more little local forest for local children to play in. Some of my best memories as a child were made in that clump. One of my first kisses was had in that clump. And you're probably listening thinking, what do you mean one of your first kisses? There's either a first kiss or there's not. But sure, you know, in and around the time, there can be a couple of them. The only reason they haven't blocked off the path itself is an ancient law in Ireland that keeps it open as a dedicated public right of way. It's an interesting one, that. It requires dedication and acceptance. Dedication by the landowners to keep the pathway open to the public, and acceptance by the public of this dedication. There's a deep connection in it. Landowner and public walker bond in an oath of respect and honour to each other. The walker vows to respect the land on which it walks. The landowner vows to dedicate open access to that land. Without necessarily ever communicating, there's a conversation. The speaker and listener hearing each other's message loud and clear. In fairness to the locals, they may have closed off the clump around them because of the increased risk of break-ins through the back as the world got less trustworthy post-1990s. There was a sad closing of one of the best hikes out in Wicklow last year too. The poor landowner was attacked by some gombeen and his dog. The pathway had been dedicated to public access for years, with the strict ruling that no dogs be taken up on it, because there were sheep on the hills. But there's always one person who'll ruin it for everyone else. And this agent didn't listen. He decided his dog was a special case, and went to go up on the lands with the dog. When he was asked to come down and take the dog off the mountain, he attacked the landowner. The landowner did what anyone else would do, and decided if people wouldn't listen to and respect the rules of the agreement, he'd close off access. Aherna, be cancer, agus eishlin. Lord, graciously hear us. A behest to the Lord, or depending on your belief, Lady, Sun, Moon, God or Goddess, to be kind, gracious and listen. One day at Mass during Lent, I was on the bell. That meant you had to ring the bell to mark the consecration of the bread and wine when the priest lifted it. Lent Masses always had incense burning at them. I'm not great with very strong smells. I love incense, but I can only handle certain types and not too strong. On this day, I was kneeling there, like a good wee Mass servant Colleen, a young girl in Irish Gaelic, the Irish language. And my granny was front and centre where she always was. The canon was doing Mass. He was quite old by then, and he'd often forget things or make mistakes. I heard the whole consecration happen. I lifted the bell when the bread went up, then when the wine went up. I was doing my job really well. The next thing, I see Granny waving her hand at me, mouthing, "Ring the bell, ring the bell." The priest was holding up the bread again. "Again?" I thought. I mouthed back to Granny. "He did it already. Did you not hear him?" I don't know if I passed out from the incense for a minute or if I fell into a warped dream state, but I must have heard the whole thing in my head and thought I was listening to it. I convinced myself what I'd heard was right. There was no telling me otherwise. I was certain I'd been listening intently. How did I hear something so differently to everyone else? It's very difficult to listen attentively nowadays. Many people have lost the ability to listen. There's so much information constantly coming at us from all angles that it's hard to know how to discern what's important enough to be listened to and what can be ignored. What we've heard and what our minds may have put together from a mix of messages and memories. Add to that the pressure of finding a way to be seen and heard in a noisy world, having to prove oneself to managers, lovers, family members, social media followers and the world at large. Feeling the need to be seen as the one who knows, the one who can be called upon. And we witness the ability to listen, pause, consider and respond, being replaced by a race to be the first to answer, to be ready to reply before a person has finished speaking, ready to prove to the room that we are all knowing, all understanding, and the reliable expert that can be called upon in all instances. Nowadays, many listen to reply and don't even try to hear at all. Someone speaks too melodically. "Oh, it's too musical and hard to follow." Someone speaks too monotonously. "It's too slow, flat, boring to follow." So how on earth can we get the balance just right? We can't. Communication is two-way. When we have problems with how another communicates, that's our biggest problem. Judgment. We decide that the other person is not doing it right. We're listening for the shapes, sounds, words or phrases we want to hear, how we prefer to hear them. As far as the speaker is concerned, they may be speaking perfectly clearly. There tends to be a lot of onus placed upon speakers, and not a huge amount of responsibility placed upon listeners, to develop how they hear and activate their ears. In Dublin, I used often to see bus drivers look at international students and tourists as if they were speaking a different language when they were asking for tickets or checking if they were on the right bus. The opposite was true as well, of course. You could very easily tell the bus drivers who bothered to try to hear and those who didn't. Something very similar happened to me in a taxi in Spain when I was in my early 20s. That conversation, short as it was enough to have me feeling completely incapable of communicating in Spanish, despite the fact that I was acing it at college. Needless to say, I didn't try communicating with another local again on that holiday. Communication is two-way. How we listen shapes how we respond, which in turn shapes the overall conversation. There needs to be an effort made on both sides to connect. The listener and the speaker are equally important and responsible. For those listeners engaging with speakers of English as a second, third, fourth, fifth or whatever language, it's even more important to show compassion and respect for them while listening. One of the areas I coach clients on is active listening. Some need to learn that they're not always expected to speak or provide an answer, that their role solely is to listen. Not all the time, but in particular meetings or presentations, for example. Others need to pause and collect their thoughts, regulating their emotions before responding, leaving the more reactive reply to rest. For others, it's learning to listen to themselves, and others again, how to listen to understand, across cultures, languages and accents, not to listen to correct. I remember sitting at a group table in a restaurant one night, and this hasn't happened only once, but I heard a girl, an English speaker, correct someone's grammar after they spoke, and she had absolutely no permission to do so. It's a commonality, particularly amongst English speakers. I get it, right? You think you're doing them a favour, helping them learn. But in fact, I was going to say you here, but somebody who does this, anybody who does this, correct somebody else's grammar, language, pronunciation, anything without their permission, all you're doing is pointing out that they've made an error, acting like a parent or a teacher, and publicly shaming them in front of a group of peers or strangers. Who gave you permission to judge them? English speakers bastardize French words all the time. Try saying the word or the phrase music genre. And I'm saying genre here in the full knowledge that my pronunciation of it is dreadful. I have a French brother-in-law. But try saying something like music genre. And I'm saying genre here, right? We say genre normally when we say in English, but it's like genre. The end of the word is supposed to be. But try saying it correctly for a French person. They'll patiently accept your pronunciation, even though it causes them slight pain in their ears to hear. They've learned how to listen, to adapt their ears to English speakers, to us who destroy so many of their words, unaware that we're even using French words when speaking. Bilingual and multilingual language speakers grow up learning how to listen to understand. There are many ways to develop those skills. In the next part of this episode, I'm going to share some generalized skills. Next week or some week in the future, because I don't want to limit myself just in case something comes up between this and next week. But we'll dig a bit deeper and I'll go through some of the more subtle speech cues that indicate emotion, finality and other conversation markers when listening to English speakers. I'll mention some of the cultures of communication I've lived in and we'll explore how different cultures listen, using the culture active and culture mapping tools I use when training clients. Engagement isn't always up to the speaker. Placing the responsibility for communication on the speaker is a mistake and a habit we need to get out of. Communication is two-way, just like a relationship. Well, like a standard monogamous relationship. I understand that there are some of you out there who prefer a more open type of approach to relationships. For over 20 years, I helped my mum run Festin Dalgan, the biggest competitive speech and drama festival in our county, and many counties surrounding it, actually. But in our rooms, when a person was on stage, you didn't speak, you didn't move, you didn't even enter. Once a person went on stage, nobody was allowed to go into the room or leave it. We had people on every door, in and out of the rooms. That's how I was trained. When someone is performing on a stage, unless they openly invite communication, you listen attentively. It helps them feel confident and safe. When someone doesn't feel heard, completely heard without judgment, they can go into what's called a threat state. Their degree of certainty can lower and they may feel less capable. And that can induce a state of panic or increase their stress levels. It's kind to show you're listening to someone, without judgment, without waiting to respond. Now, things tend to be different at events, of course, in comparison to competitions. And I'll admit to being guilty of using my phone when people are on stage myself. But I tend to use it only to engage on socials, to promote the speaker or take notes. I won't even check my messages. I feel the sting of unkindness in it. I try to put myself in the speaker's shoes. Everything is about relationships. I heard a podcast host say this the other day, and I've heard it said over and over again in the past few years. I'm not denying an aspect of the truth in it. We all need support, guidance, and at times bolstering from others. But there's disempowerment in those words to watch out for. In a way, they can give permission to people to do less and place responsibility upon others to give them the confidence to push forwards. There's an aspect of confidence that comes from audience engagement, of course, but we can't rely on an audience to make us confident. Some people are just stoic listeners. Some cultures too. I'm an active listener and I'll support a speaker, but if you annoy me or you ask me to get up to dance, for example, I'll leave first, rude or not. There are boundaries. It's a relationship. There's an energetic resonance required to make music, just as there is to make magic, vocal magic, speaker and listener, interacting and engaging with each other, working to create a safe space to connect. What do you think of when I say ice cream? Bailey's. Winter. Spring. I'm guessing things like wafers, sunshine, Christmas, hot chocolate, ice, snow, lamb, daffodils and flowers came to mind. What happened? I primed your brain for what was coming. That's a listening skill. Before listening to a topic, you can prime your brain. I mentioned priming in the brain a couple of episodes ago. I think it was the identity episode. Imagine you know you're going to attend a presentation about public speaking skills. Well, how can you prime your brain for that before you even attend it? What can you do before you listen to the person speak? Think about the topic. Think about the speaker. Think about some text you might read around it. What do you already know? What interests you? What do you want to learn more about? What are you good at? What are you not good at with respect to the topic? Thinking about all this in advance will start to prime your brain. It'll rise in your mind vocabulary you already have inside. But whether it's in the language you're going to the presentation in, which might or might not be your first language, allow all of that knowledge and experience to come in. Please don't block out that beautiful dictionary of knowledge, awareness and language that you have from whatever number of languages you speak. Let all the knowledge and awareness and words come in all the different languages. Next, think about what you want to listen to before you actually start paying attention. Do you want to hear the detail of the whole topic? Do you want to hear only the main ideas or the general information? Or do you want to be really specific in what you hear? During listening, there are other skills that you can apply. At the beginning, as the person begins to speak, start to notice them. If you have an opportunity to speak to them before they actually give the presentation, all the better. Pay attention to things like their voice, their accent, their speaking style, how they move their voice up, down, and pause, how quickly they speak, how slowly they speak, I'll talk about this in more detail in later episodes because there's so much to vocal modulation and the shape of sounds in the mouths across languages and the different listening patterns. But think about the mannerism of the person and the speaker. What about what they're using? Are they using slides? Or have they given you some documentation in advance? If they're using text, or if you're reading something, what type of text is it? Is it academic? Is it general? Is it scientific? Is it related to your field? Is it unrelated? Some texts will be more complex than others in how they've been written. By paying attention to all of these things, you're again attuning your ear and priming your brain to the speaker, their content, voice, and topic. Let's take accents as a wee example. Say you know that someone's going to speak in a very thick Irish accent. Or a very thick American accent. I say American accent and Irish accent. Let's make that a little bit more specific because there's no one American accent or one Irish accent. So let's say a North Side Dublin accent. And if I can do it, a very thick New York accent. Now I'm choosing these accents because they tend to be well known around the world. And it might be a little bit stereotypical when I say they tend to be well known. And of course, within these accents, there are idiosyncrasies as well. But so let's say, for example, you're going to listen to someone from the North Side of Dublin. If you're from Dublin and you're listening to me now and you're thinking, I'm from the North Side and I don't sound like that. I'm sorry if it's completely wrong, right? I'm not from Dublin, but I'm just putting on the best accent I can for demonstrative purposes. So say then, right, we're in New York and we get the coffee type New York accent, that very typical coffee type New York accent. It's flawless. The vowels are coming down into the front of the mouth and there's a bit more rounding down in the front of the mouth instead of in the middle or around the back of the mouth. If I've hurt your ear there, I'm sorry, but I hope you get the general idea. There's like that, as I said, that sucking down into the front of the mouth of the vowels and some of the New York accents. But what's the point in considering this before you've actually heard anything? Well, you might know that you're easily able to listen to and understand a particular accent from a particular area. So then if you start thinking, okay, I'm going to be listening to somebody from Dublin. Which part of Dublin? Oh, okay, that part of Dublin. Yeah, I've heard that part of Dublin's accent before. I'm fairly used to it. So I'm probably going to hear things like bus instead of bus. Like, whoa, bus. I'm going for the bus. Whoa, instead of bus. So there's a different vowel sound. You might even hear that difference in the light at the end of words. There's a different vowel sound. I don't say sound with a hard D that's vocalized. I say t a little bit. It's the same with the New York coffee accent. And again, it's very generalized, but I'm talking like you want to shape your mouth around the coffee. And if we go to London and we've got a Cockney accent from London, then we might hear something like a difference in the double T or the H, I was going to say. You might hear ba'a. You might hear ba'a or wa'a. You're going to hear sounds being dropped. Who needs an ass? Who needs an ass? For who needs a house? And then, and this one's a wee bit harder for me because it's hard to go in from London to Australia. But if we go to Australia, your mates might sound like this depending on which part they're from. I messed it up there at the end. Pero si estamos en España, if we're in Spain, you might not hear one of these sounds. You might not hear some of the sounds. Accents vary across languages, cultures, whether it's different languages or the same language. To become a more engaged, intentional listener, it's important to understand that accents are everywhere. No human doesn't have one. Even someone who uses sign language or sounds and gestures to speak uses them uniquely. That's their accent. I've been looking at the click sounds in, I shouldn't call them click sounds, the click syllables, I think I'll call them, in African languages recently, and trying to learn some of them. They're an accent as well, and often people will look at that and say, oh, that's a sound, but you hear a lot of people who speak those languages say, it's not a sound, it's a syllable in my accent, in my language. We train ourselves to know what to listen for. We train ourselves to judge what to listen for and what's acceptable for us to hear. And we can do the opposite. By anticipating accents and topics and sounds in advance, we can become more engaged listeners. Outside of accents, we can also focus on language. We can predict language. But it's easier while you're listening. The brain actually does this automatically. You're better able to do it the higher your proficiency level in a language. Actually, something that happened to me a couple of weeks ago is partly what inspired this episode. I was in a bar called Silks beside where I live, and there's a Spanish lady working in it, helping out the Irish fella who runs it. She speaks mad fast Spanish from Granada, and not a breath of English that I'm aware of. But she's created some nice comfortable spaces outside for us to sit, and I complimented her on it. So a wee bit of a while later, she came out and says, ¿Has gustado el sitio? Really fast. So I'm looking at her. Okay, can you repeat that? And she repeated it. She repeated it again. And then eventually I pulled out the word gustar, which is the verb to like something. But I wouldn't have anticipated the present perfect tense. Have you liked the place? ¿Has gustado el sitio? My English speaking brain was looking for, do you like? Or in Spanish, te gusta el sitio. We got there and I understood it eventually. But I needed to listen intently, pulling out the word that she was trying to say. Well, not that she was trying to say, that I was trying to hear. Listening intently to the key words and phrases that you're most interested in, based on what you've decided in advance you want to listen for, will help you get a shape for what else is being said around a topic. You can also listen out for words which are repeated. Paraphrases, synonyms, antonyms, prefixes and suffixes. Proper nouns. Things like countries, cities, dates, anything that's specific will help you identify what a topic is about in each section if you're very new to the information. If words aren't being repeated, maybe a concept or an idea is being paraphrased, so listen out for that instead. On top of that, listen out for grammar, pronouns, conjunctions. A lot of speakers, if they've been developed in their speaking skills and if they've practiced and trained, will use linking devices, signposting you through when they're speaking. You should hear them as I'm speaking through this. I'm not using too many, but there's an example of something that's giving you an indication that a piece of information that's coming next will be contradictory to what I've just said. A moment ago I said on top of that. But to an English speaker, on top of that is standard. It means an addition. But think about this coming in from another language. On top of that. On top of what? The table? The desk? The chair? Sometimes language speakers can take things literally and they don't understand that something is an addition phrase, so you need to make sure that it's clear for them. Often speakers will use acronyms, shortening things down into stupid letters, GM, OPM, WXYZ, index, ZLP, QR, purple. I know I didn't use any proper real acronyms there, but I wanted to make a point of how stupid they are. It's wonderful that they shorten things, and it's wonderful that within an organisation people can learn your dictionary of acronyms. But as a speaker, I am asking you now to please not do this. It doesn't make you sound smarter. It alienates completely the new people who join your organisation. Definitely anybody who's outside of it. In fact, it could lose you business, because the person you've used it with, or the culture you've used it with, is too embarrassed to check its meaning, and they just won't continue engaging with you. But if you are in an experience where you're not sure about a word's meaning or a phrase's meaning because it's made into an acronym or for some other reason, take a breath, think about the structure around it. And if there's a complete lack of clarity and it's dropping communication, try to figure out what's been said just before it, what you've heard said just after it. See if you can guess or infer from the context what the meaning might be. And if in doubt, make a note. Politely interrupt and ask the speaker if it's causing a breakdown in communication. Or look it up later. There's a couple of other things that you can do while listening to help yourself become a more active, engaged listener. Did you know that cats can move each ear independently at a rotation of 180 degrees? Why? If you thought it so they can note sounds in their environment and determine the direction they're coming from, you thought right. Have you ever noticed yourself tilt the side of your head towards a person you wanted to hear more clearly? Why do you think you do that? You know this already, I don't doubt. Body language is a very important cue in communication. What does it mean when someone draws their shoulders back? What about when they fold their arms look up to the left and purse their lips. Watch your listeners over the next week and see if you see these behaviours. How do you feel when they happen? Do you do them? What do you think it's indicating? I'll talk through them next week with reference to... Well, I'll tell you then. Well, next week or whenever I do the next episode on this. Oh, did you hear what she just said? She went right for the jugular. Some speakers can come across too sharply or directly, particularly if they're speaking English and coming from certain cultures. Others might speak in circles, and you have the feeling like you're going to get it to a dead end. Sometimes you have to infer how others communicate and what the words they're saying actually mean and what they intend to communicate. Now, I know that's not very helpful when you're supposed to be learning from someone or getting a task achieved. But when we're dealing with egos, or with people who aren't necessarily used to teaching others, or leaving people come away with learning and understanding, being a more attentive, active listener can often be the only thing that facilitates communication. You need to know your triggers. What accents, vocal pitches and phrases set you off? For example, I can't stand pet names. When someone calls me dear, or lass, or love, or young lady, the lick of fire that flashes through me is hotter than a blacksmith's forge. I have to breathe really deeply, label the feeling that comes up in me, deflect it, and reconnect my ear very fast. It actually happened this week on Instagram when some man who was trying to teach me history lessons pulled commentary about my Instagram handle into an attempted insult and called me lass as a way to pull a power pose. I waited to respond, giggled, and then replied with a lad. You can't always beat your passive aggression, to be fair. But you do need to know when to bow out graciously. I could have kept on arguing with your man, but there was no point arguing with the religious zealot. Their truth is only their truth. They choose to listen to nothing else. And it's important to know when to listen to yourself. Continuing the argument with him would have meant that I got smart and took the mick, made a joke of what he was writing. I'm not like that, no matter how tripe-filled I think someone's ideas are. So I listened to my better judgment and left his truth with him. Mine will stay with me. We're from the same culture, but not the same patterns of thinking. Patterns of thinking vary vastly around the world. I could do 20 episodes on listening and communication patterns across cultures and still not have scratched the surface. We'll do some as the podcast goes along. But if you're running teams that are having challenges connecting or are getting ready to expand into more multicultural team mixes, consider getting in touch with me to arrange tailored training. Myself and a couple of colleagues have a nice blend of experience amongst us to tailor to your country and language-specific needs. As you're getting to the end of a conversation, or even as you're coming to points in the middle of it, you can also summarise. Remember what you've listened to. Make up a summary in your head. Okay, that part was about this. This part was about that. Some speakers might summarise for you. So before moving on to a section, they might say, let's just summarise what I've talked about here. In a conversation or during a meeting, you can ask the person if they'd mind you quickly summarising what you understood. Often, by doing this, you help the speaker see where they might not have been clear, or where they might like to add something. It's a great way to check and confirm understanding, without calling out errors or embarrassing the speaker in any way. Today I've talked through a few general actions that you can take to become a more engaged, active listener. You can listen out for repeated words, phrases, synonyms, proper nouns, grammar pronouns, linking devices and phrases, which lead you through a piece of text or spoken information. You can use strategies like looking out for body language, listening for general meaning, or guessing the new meaning of words and phrases. You can also summarise as you listen. See, there was a quick wee summary, and it gave you everything that I talked about. I could ask you now what you understood or what you're taking away from it, just to confirm and check that what I have said has been understood. There are also very specific speech cues you can listen for. Barack Obama is a great one for the speech cues. You can be aware of how speakers use repetition, hesitation, and filler sounds as tools. What you should hear as I'm speaking is pause. I hesitate without sticking in a lot of ums and ahs and filler words. Hang on, Christine. You're after using a load of filler words there. Yeah, I know I did. I did it on purpose for demonstrative reasons. But what you might also notice that I do give myself is time to think, using a very specific pace technique. Maybe you'll need to go back over and listen to this again to hear me do it. See if you can notice what I do. And next week, or whatever week I do the next episode, I'll teach it to you. Granny stopped going to Mass in her later years because of the stories she heard about the actions of some of the clergy towards her parishioners. It saddened her deeply. I was given a choice at 16, whether I wanted to keep going or not. By then, the ways of the earth and nature had also been bred into me, and I chose the land and spirit as my guides. I've been quite tired this week, and I'm not sure why. Last night, when I came home from classes, I'd intended to finish my episode notes and do the recording. But I stuck on Netflix while eating and started watching, and I'm sorry to the makers of the movie, right, but a pretty awful movie called Irish Wish. I nearly turned it off a few minutes in. But the fellow with the English accent was cute, and I do love a bit of squishy love. So I told myself, Christine, listen with the intention of just enjoying it, not judging it. And I left it on. I will not say that I didn't judge it. I did throughout the whole thing, but I left it on anyway. I still woke up tired this morning, so I decided I'd do a bit of listening to try to find out why. I work with a few sets of cards and a wonderful Middle Earth medicine book and set of cards called The Oracle, created by a friend of mine, Caroline Carey, who I interviewed a few months back on the podcast. It was a brilliant episode, brilliant interview, but I had to redo the audio on my side because I made a bit of a hames of it. So if you listen back to it and you don't love it, bear with me. I might see if she'll come back on and when I get my new mic sorted. But because of watching that movie last night, I made the decision to not do the podcast and to watch the movie, which is unusual for me to do, but usually when my body doesn't get into something or my head doesn't get into something that I plan to get done, I know or have come to learn that there's something missing that will be shown to me before it gets done. So this morning I decided I'd do a journey to ask for guidance about my tiredness. Before it, I pulled two cards. One of them was the talking stick. I don't have a stick I use in my work yet. I have a beautiful wooden flute that was given to me by its maker in the ruins of an old church in Malacca in Malaysia a number of years ago, after I asked him if I could play it. It's one of the central symbols on my altar, and actually also really slowed down my morning this morning. The talking stick guidance in my book is all about finding our voice, pausing to hear each other and to listen with intent. How many of our leaders have made themselves right? Caroline asks. How many have been so sure of themselves that they have not given time for the other's true growth, but rather what they thought the other needed, without listening fully? Confirming what I spoke about earlier in the episode, the teacher reminds us that if we believe we have all the answers to everyone's problems, as well as their needs, we fail to hear each other, diminishing true healing and growth. This is as true of personal communication as it is of professional, even as true as when communicating with yourself. The talking stick and the wisdom on those pages were meant for this episode. Even Stephen Covey, who the world covets, understands the power of the talking stick. Some of my listeners have told me they enjoy having something to think about or try to do after episodes. I was going to offer one about the talking stick, but we need the follow-up episode and a bit of work in between first, I sense. If you know me, you'll know that I'm big on reflection. Reflection, exploration, reviewing, reflection again, and understanding. I'm going to just take a wee second here to remind you of a way you can learn and reflect with me while supporting the work I do. My Connected Communication Resources platform is filled with reflections under the training content. I don't really commit personally to linear courses with quizzes. I tend to like to dive into content that's relevant to me apply it to my life and reflect on it. I might be wrong, but I think there are many others out there who are like me. If you're listening to this podcast and you go through with it each week and you listen and you reflect and you do some of the activities from it, you're one of those people. You're well capable of understanding what you want to develop, finding where it's located and doing the work. But that's how I've designed my online training platform. You sign up, you get 10 days of email guidance to show you around, and you have at it for yourself. Now you can set your goals and submit them to me. You can comment, you can share in a community section. That's there too if you want that accountability. But you don't have to. You can be a silent studier, like me. I prefer to learn alone or in intimate settings conversing with others. If you consistently listen to this podcast and you take something from it or you get something from it, I ask you to consider joining the resources platform. When you join, you support what I do. You help me keep the podcast content here free and the resources available at less than the price of a cup of tea and a scone in Ireland. My deepest desire is to be able to keep doing that and ultimately to develop it into a pay it forward model as it grows. Everyone gets content. Those who can afford to pay and those who can't get special opportunities to access it for free. If you've never seen the movie Pay It Forward, watch it. You'll understand why it had such an impact on me and why my heart is so set on doing this. I believe in you and me. In between this episode and the next one I do on listening, might be next week, but as you said, I might take a fancy to something else, or my guides might say, here, do this one first. So in between this and the next episode I do on listening, at home, at work, in a taxi, on a bus, I encourage you to do the following reflection. How many times have you decided you could fix somebody else's problem before they finished telling you what the problem was? How many times have you finished a sentence only to realise the speaker wasn't going to say what you'd assumed? How many times have you failed to pause to allow your listener to ask a question or reflect on what you've said, or to think about what might be coming next? When you know somebody is listening to correct you, how does it feel? How many times have you felt the urge to react violently or angrily when someone made a comment that triggered you? When you finish thinking about and reflecting on all of them, put it all together in a little task for yourself. Actively listen when you hear people speak, regardless of the situation you're in. Pay attention to yourself as a speaker and watch how people listen to you. Think about what you've said or what you heard. Think about what you listened for specifically and how it worked. Inquire with yourself, how did I do that? Did I do that well? Did it work for me? What worked about it? What didn't work? What can I do differently next time? Connected communication. Whether it's conversation, presentation, talks, it doesn't matter. It's all about two sides. There are speakers and listeners. The speaker needs to be speaking for the listeners, not for themselves. The listeners need to be listening for the speaker, so they can follow what's been said and help the speaker feel motivated to continue, especially if the speaker is visibly uncomfortable. It's a two-way street. Unless you're standing, well actually, I was going to say unless you're standing and talking in front of the mirror, but if you're talking in front of the mirror, that's still a two-way conversation. You're speaking to yourself, so you can reply. Now you're probably thinking, Christine, you can't be talking to yourself. If you talk to yourself like that, it means you're mad. Well, that's what society says. But like I have said to my students and learners and clients and anybody who will listen to me for years, you find me someone who's normal, and then tell me I'm crazy. I've been speaking to myself for years. I have great conversations with myself. You have to when you live alone and so much swims around in your head. But now I know, because I've studied neuroscience, that when I take what's going on inside my head out of it and I speak it, it means that I'm communicating it in a way that my brain can understand, instead of just loading my mind with the thoughts. When I remove it from my mind and my brain, I free up space to understand it, to be able to listen to it. So have a chat with yourself. Listen to yourself. Listen to others. whomever you're listening to, listen actively, listen attentively, and engage as you do. Thank you for listening today. Gujiyam Kedarela, Manakti, Agus Buegas.